Welcome to the AI and Beyond for Business podcast. Today, we're going to be tackling a very tough question. Why do so many venture-backed startups fail? More importantly, we're going to explore a groundbreaking new solution that's aiming to change that statistic for the better. I'm thrilled to be joined by two very special guests who've been instrumental in this innovation. First, we have Richard, the founder of HeyPixi, an AI-driven platform that's taking a unique approach to startup success. And joining him is Keith from Zasmic, representing the engineering powerhouse that provided the resources to build Pixi. Richard, Keith, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Richard, I want to start with you. Let's get straight to the heart of the matter. Now, the vast majority of venture-backed startups end up failing. The number I saw a few years ago, which was popularly kind of going around, was about 80-83%. That's changed drastically over the last few years. So I want to know from your vantage point, what's the single biggest reason that this failure rate was so high in the first place and has only continued to rise?
Yeah. So tragedy of the situation is that statistic hasn't really changed. It's a very narrow, whether it's 15% or 10% or, you know, to some extent, depending on which part of the world you're in, that will have a big impact on what those success rates are. The figures are well north of 4 out of 5 don't make it. And we're talking about companies that had intent to scale, not just, you know, all new companies set up. And that's a very, you know, kind of depressing number. If you consider the enthusiasm and the energy and the innovation and the capital that's gone into getting these businesses to the party line in the first place.
Right. And with this massive problem as the context to the conversation we're having today, can you introduce Pixi to us? So, you know, just in kind of the simplest way, how is your platform designed to be kind of the antidote to this problem that you've described? And then what makes it so unique?
Well, you know, the problem's not hard to spot. It's not like we've discovered a fresh problem. It's an enormous problem. And the issues have been about the way that we can go about tackling the problem. Now, we've got fantastic, some of the brightest people on the planet work in venture capital firms, in ecosystems, in other incubator type scenarios that help these startups to be more successful, and the impact they have is dramatic. I mean, doubles and triples sometimes their outcomes, but their bandwidth is very narrow. We're talking single digit capacity, 5% at maximum in terms of the number of startups, even in the UK, that can get onto an incubator program. And about half that would even get venture capital funding. Our view was, look, that's fantastic, but how could we take those sort of principles? What goes into that wisdom? What goes into that insight? What goes into that kind of the ability to nurture those founders that are lucky enough to be in those programs, and then bring that to a broader church, essentially democratize the opportunity that those narrow few have in order to make their own individual companies be more successful? So like with anything else, if you're going to scale up dramatically, you need a system. So we built a system that we can bring scaling into to then manage it on a systematic basis. And like any, you know, large ecosystem, be it in the natural world or be it in the commercial world, if it's large enough, there'll be patterns. And so what we set about was, what are those patterns? Let's decode the way the ecosystem operates. What is it that Darwinian sense separates the companies that succeed and are winners from those that don't? And if we can understand what that delta is, then we can work on it. And if we can narrow the delta, more will scale up. It's as simple as that.
And Richard, I want to take this opportunity for you to kind of dive a bit into what Pixi exactly is doing from a functional standpoint. So how are both users coming together, both the investors and the startups, to actually gain some benefit from this solution?
You know, the lovely irony of it is that both sides win. The more startups that successfully scale up, the more investors in those businesses will generate returns on their investment. So there's virtue in both sides coming together, and that's part of the bridge that Pixi is forming between the companies that are looking to be invested in and to scale, and the investors that are looking to find the great companies to invest in that they can help with the capital to scale up. So there's an alignment of interest between the investor community and the founder community. But what's the process that we can bring them both along so that we end up with an outcome which is in everyone's interest, which is high success rates? So the way we made this work in practice is we went right back to fundamentals. You know, there are certain immutable laws in most universes. There are immutable laws in the startup universe. And there are patterns that we can decode and we can identify and we can empirically validate, we can academically ground the behaviors and traits that are common to companies that succeed. And once you've isolated what they are, and we've got we're around 100 that we're adequately happy with in terms of their veracity, we'll probably look for about 250 by the time we get this product into the market. So that gives us a whole raft of different ways to reference individual companies against across a whole range of criteria: financial, management, presence in the market, what they've done in terms of their hiring policy, where they're located, what the sort of incentives they have for their teams. And there's a whole range of different things that feed into this. So we've got like this, we call it the scale up DNA. So we've got kind of decoupled what it is to be a success. And so now what we then do is take each individual company that's on Pixie and say, right, how do you measure up against these markers? Because if we understand how you look against each of the markers, we can figure out which ones we can help you to close and which ones need to be closed now, which ones can be part for the future, and how that all plays into different issues like, for example, where you are in the world or where you are on your growth journey. So this whole sort of melting pot, this data lake, every time I talk to Keith about this, he sort of paled. But, you know, we're something in the order of 250 million potential data points at the intersection between these benchmarks and the data sources that we'll have going through Vertex for the API sources going to commercial databases, Crunchbase or Dealroom, pulling down open source data from in the UK, particularly, say, for example, Companies House or the Office for National Statistics, Eurostat. You know, we'll work on whatever the best sources are, the best languages around the world. And so when we have the ability to intersect, we've got fact. So the starting point, which AI then works from in doing the diagnostics and the reasoning and the inference that comes out of that understanding, is really solid. We're not asking AIs to make up any of the background source material. They're only supplied with a starting point that is unique, because there is no other set of data in the world that is as comprehensive, as deep and wide as the one we're building here. So our starting point then go on and develop the foresight component of Pixie. That's all hindsight. We just built what's happened. Now in the middle called insight, where we're looking at kind of how we decode that within the context of some form of algorithm and some form of intelligence. And then we bring that into a forward-facing version of Pixie, which says, okay, for you, customer number X, given your circumstances, given what you've told us you want to do, what your individual objectives and aims and ambitions and neuroses and risks and attitude to the planet and all those sorts of things that we'll learn about you, this is the five things right now you need to be focused on. And let's get those done, get those out of the way, and guess what? There'll be another five. And another five. And probably, you know, over the course of a scale-up journey, you know, which could be typically 4 to 6 or 7 years, you probably have, let's say, 5,000 of these considerations that you'll make along the way. And the maths is pretty straightforward. If you make each one of those 1% better, it's a tiny incremental improvement each time, your chances of being successful has just gone up 50%. And it is as simple as that. Small gains, huge outcomes, every single day, Pixie alongside you, making each of your decisions a little tiny bit better. And that's the approach we bring, which is absolutely completely different to the way that startups are being supported in the current environment.
I want to stop right here. I felt it was quite important at this point for us to actually get a look into what Pixie looks like and how it operates. So Richard was actually kind enough to send over a demo, and I want to share it with all you guys so you can get a look into the power and capability that it has. We're going to take a look at that for a second, and then we'll get back to the show.
Welcome to Pixie, the AI-powered business intelligence platform that transforms startup scaling from guesswork into systematic strategy. Getting started is simple. Just tell us your company name. We will search our databases to confirm your details and create a personalized experience just for you. While you're watching this, we're already working behind the scenes, gathering the initial data we need to build your scaling intelligence. We systematically collect information from multiple sources to create your first scale-up score. This isn't guesswork. It's based on the measurable patterns we've identified from successful scale-ups. Meet Hey Pixie, your AI advisor that's available whenever you need guidance. We establish comprehensive business intelligence by integrating with your existing enterprise systems, Salesforce, HubSpot, and over 70 other platforms. Your login credentials auto-fill, making setup effortless. This creates your personalized roadmap of weighted growth activities. Think of it as your dynamic growth advisor, helping you make the right decisions at the right time. Our platform enables systematic execution of your scaling initiatives. Ooh. Task allocation, progress monitoring, and team collaboration tools ensure your growth strategy maintains momentum and achieves measurable outcomes. Advanced project management capabilities provide granular control over resource allocation and team coordination. Filtering, assignment, and customization features ensure the platform aligns with your operational requirements rather than constraining your workflow. Our adaptive intelligence system generates targeted questionnaires based on your specific business context. Audio and video response capabilities facilitate comprehensive data capture. This represents the foundation of our Socratic methodology, evidence-based analysis that eliminates assumptions and considers all relevant variables. Your scale-up score continuously evolves as our system processes additional business intelligence. Hey Pixie provides instant access to performance analytics and strategic recommendations based on your real-time data. We deliver actionable insights derived from team performance metrics and business trend analysis. Whether you require sales forecasting, growth projections, or departmental performance summaries, our system generates targeted intelligence for immediate strategic application. This demonstration represents core functionality within a comprehensive scaling intelligence platform. Pixie operates as your strategic partner, delivering continuous, data-driven insights for systematic business growth. Our mission is to democratize access to proven scaling intelligence, ensuring every ambitious founder has systematic guidance to optimize their company's growth potential. Ready to succeed by design, not by chance. Spots on our waitlist are filling fast. Sign up now at heypixie.ai and unlock the AI-powered tools built to help you scale smarter.
And now let's get back to the conversation with Richard. Yeah, I appreciate that response, Richard. And we'll come back to a more in-depth conversation about the solution itself and the technology behind it. I want to kind of zoom out and actually bring Keith in and ask him about his experience of that first conversation with Richard, where he presented that idea to you. How did it also over time evolve in conversations with Richard and open for you both to kind of chip into this? But Keith, what was your initial reaction?
We had such an interesting start to our discussions, Richard, didn't we? Like, if I remember correctly, we had our first 1 hour introductory call. And for the first 10 or 15 minutes, it was literally just a company introduction and discussion. But we had the pleasure of having our chief AI officer, Yuri, on the call. We subsequently spent the next 45 minutes actually doing live demonstrations of the AI use cases and the POCs that we've built in-house that we have in what you'd call our POC engine. And I think what that done was it accelerated the collaboration and the partnership in terms of not the what if, but okay, we can deliver just flexibility with the AI solutions comparative to the Pixie goal and Richard's vision for Pixie. That really accelerated, you know, the refinement and the strategy, the delivery strategy, what we wanted to basically do, obviously getting into this agreement in terms of the SOW creation and mapping out that roadmap to then kick off and go through delivery in those iterative processes as well. So,
I mean, it's a sort of feature that's been part of the conversation, and that is the things that really interest me, the things you can't do, because you absolutely could not do Pixie 18 months ago, Keith, maybe even less. So talking about things that aren't possible helps us to develop for things that will become possible.
Yeah.
And that's been fundamentally our philosophy about being very technically agile. I don't exaggerate. The only hardware that the company owns is the laptop that we're having this conversation on right now. So, you know, we're not in the business of raising vast amounts of capital to buy a huge server or set up huge server farms. We're not in the business of training, you know, language models with 10 or 15 or 20 million that would cost even a small one. We're much better off working with companies like Zasmic, who've got access to those, and Google. I mean, the combination is tremendous, because that gives us access to not only the architecture unlimited, but also the data measures and the guardrails unlimited. And then you've got this think group that sits, you know, between us and the technical solutions, and goes, right, and this is the love I love about working with Keith. We go, right, okay, so not what are we going to do, it's how are we going to do it. And so I want to do this, and Keith would go, well, you can't do that. I said, well, I realize that, but if we could, would we do it? And then, and you know, in most cases, we've figured out a way to either, you know, come at it a different way, or as has happened in a couple of things, where it's just landed in front of us. Agentic sorted out a whole amount of some of the rag problems that we were wrestling with. Vertex was like falling out of heaven in terms of our ability to connect very quickly and in ways that would have been horrible, you know, 18 months ago. So we can bring delivery of Pixie at an economic cost, and it's borderless and is accessible to all, and we don't come burdened with any prejudice, or we don't have any preconceptions about the way people should behave, or whether they have a right to be involved in any case. We just bring solutions. And I love the fact that we can be offering Pixie to not only help startups in the obvious locations. It's almost slightly an unobvious place to launch Pixie would be in London, which is already, you know, the world's number two ranked startup ecosystem. It happens to be, I think if we can prove it here, we can do the Sinatra on it and prove it anywhere. I was in Marrakesh just a few months ago and dealing with the startup community there. And I mean, they have got as much innovation. They've got as much energy. The enthusiasm is literally off the dial, but they don't have an environment that we enjoy here in London where, you know, within 10 minutes, you can be in front of investors. You can be in front of, you know, ecosystem leaders. You can be in events in the evening. It's almost exhausting just being here in terms of the opportunities you have, not if you're in Marrakesh. And the ability for us to take all the great things that we've learned over the years and in these technologies now that we have and deploy that into places that have got the enthusiasm and the courage and the intent is really exciting. You know, the CEO of Lovable was on CNBC a couple of days ago, and he was talking about how the technical hurdle, which is required to get an AI-native business out of the traps, has now been reduced so dramatically. He can see a 50x increase in the number of AI-driven businesses. I think it's fantastic. How wonderful is that? So the technology stands to one side, but there's still going to be challenges with scaling that business that have absolutely nothing to do with have they got the right engineers or have they got the right programming capabilities. They're still going to have to scale that business. They're still going to have to go through the phases and deal with the challenges that are outside of the engineering team. And I think there's, you know, this is where, you know, we enjoy a certain future proofing with the business model we've got. So we're not anchored in technology. We're not anchored in hardware, and we're not anchored in the solutions that's going to be overtaken. Because, you know, there's a substitute for it, like, for example, you know, the ability to code now. Almost anybody can code.
Yeah, I think it's time, and I think the timing is perfect for a Pixie and the vision that you have and the senior leadership team have, Richard, as well, because we've got this perfect synergy of, like you say, economic infrastructure that you can mold to deliver the vision. And we've also got this inherent VC or startup mentality that spans from like the 1970s or something till now, where traditionally here's how the growth pattern and VCs have sort of nurtured startups or nurtured their investments over time. We see the landscape of innovative startups like Lovable, for example, and globally we see innovation basically hitting a rapid ramp. And at the same time, if the inherent pattern or the way in which the evolution of startups, especially within the VC context, isn't evolved or addressed, or that startup, let's say, scale up or accelerated growth mindset isn't addressed with an innovative approach, well, then there's a complete sort of mismatch or mispairing between where innovation and where infrastructure is basically rapidly running towards and the inherent growth patterns of these companies. We've talked about this a lot in depth in terms of where VCs historically have incubated and where startups have actually tracked to where they get to now. And it seems like it's an absolute perfect time for Pixie.
Yeah, it's kind of you to say so, Keith. So it's almost like we call it like a white space, competitive white space. So you've got all the software technology that exists right now, used in startups, using the form of some sort of SaaS platform, which provides a nice neat interface between a set of data and the user. And you've got, you know, the really smart guys who've got, you know, long experience of nurturing some companies up to enormous valuations. And then you've got these extraordinarily expensive business intelligence platforms, which are beyond the reach of most startups and their financial resources, even their capabilities. Need almost full-time people to run things like Tableau and Salesforce to get anything out and, you know, full value. But in the middle is this vacancy, and the vacancy is huge. And we're driving straight at that to say we're not competing necessarily head-on with SaaSes, we're not competing necessarily at all with the ecosystems or with VCs, and we're certainly not competing with big enterprise-grade intelligence platforms. What we're going to do is fix that bit in the middle, which is where the founders right now are not well-served and some good service brought in there at a price they can afford on a delivery platform that they can access, speaking, you know, on behalf of their data and on behalf of what's been proven to make a difference. We absolutely can improve their potential to scale their business.
Such a positive impact in terms of the evolution from a founder perspective, and then such a positive impact in terms of a VC's perspective. But then we also have these hyperscalers that are building this infrastructure, these IaaS and PaaS services and delivering it out into the ethos. And if you look at these hyperscalers, Google, Microsoft, AWS as examples, they all have specific startup programs. Now, what are their inherent backbone of their startup programs? Normally, there's an eligibility criteria, let's say, that you would get a specific amount of credit if you are verified VC-backed, etc. So the domino effect doesn't just stem from a founder evolution and how to scale up your business, also directly impacting the VCs, also directly impacting the hyperscalers. The knock-on effect is right up through the chain of growth, so to speak, isn't it?
On top of that, there's a network effect too, because the more that we're successful, the more we understand what success looks like, and it becomes a virtuous circle. I mean, one of the questions that, you know, that I sometimes get challenged with, which is an interesting question, is at what point, what's the tipping point where Pixie's developed a fountain of knowledge or a foundation of knowledge, which means it has the ability to provide intelligence within its own environment. And, you know, of course, it would be impossible to say what precisely that threshold is, well, certainly within the context of my mathematical capabilities. But if you think, you know, by the end of next year, we had 5,000 companies onboarded onto Pixie, which is not terribly aggressive ambition. And we then back those 5,000 into the data pool we talked about at the beginning of this conversation. And then you're getting into really huge data intersections, nudging up against the sort of quadrillion range. And at some point, there will be enough capability within there, and then mapped around with vastly accelerating abilities on AI to then synthesize genuinely, unique advice that's based on a knowledge base that we almost entirely control.
So you talked a bit about how startups end up failing and it's not necessarily the idea, but just a lot of missing pieces for those startups that lead to this high failure rate. There is also a second side to the coin, which is the actual investors, the VC investors. You can be a great business, a great startup, which checks all those boxes, but not being connected to the appropriate investor can also lead to that sort of downfall. So could you talk a bit about how Pixie also and you yourself view the other side of the coin, how you're looking to make it a solution, not just for startups, but also the investors here?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a coexistence here. There's a co-alignment of interests. So there's two sides to the let's call it the portfolio investor or classically a VC firm in this environment, where they're making a number of investments during the course of the year. And then managing the best out of those portfolios that they've invested in. So if you look at the classic dynamics of this situation now, the typical mid-sized VC, I'm speaking very generally on behalf of all of them, which of course I'm going to inevitably offend somebody. But let's say out of the people they come across during the course of the year, they'll probably invest in about 1% of those people that come across their threshold. Mm. So at some point during that, from first contact through to a check being cut, there's a 99% inefficiency in that funnel, okay? Which, if you look at it in the abstract, if you invent a funnel that works like that, well, that exists. You know, my go-to-market funnels are much more efficient than that, right? So that clearly is an opportunity. If we can bring a much smarter alignment of people seeking capital and people providing capital, and this is where Pixie's scale-up score is really going to play into the equation, because we will be able to, in a similar degree of confidence, in a similar degree of additional mathematical integrity, bring to our scale-up score what you typically would get in a credit score. So it will become a benchmark score, which in due time will be adopted by the industry as being the best reference that indicates the scale-up potential of a particular startup, much in the way that a credit score is a best indication of your ability to repay a particular fine. Same principle. So it's entirely possible that we could then go to, say, Keith, for example, who runs a nice mid-size early-stage VC fund in the UK, and say, right, Keith, so we understand your mandate. We understand you only want to invest in B Corp companies, so we're not going to bring you one that doesn't do that. And we'll agree that that you'll take a first meeting with anyone who's got a scale-up score of over 600. There's no guarantee you'll invest, but at least we won't bring you people that haven't reached that threshold. So you immediately eliminated the ones you were never investing because they're outside your mandate. And you're also not going to be taking on meetings or even have your team cull through these vast amounts of which you'd never invest in the first place. We've already narrowed that funnel down. I think we can probably look anybody in the eye and very confidently say we can knock 2/3 of that out of that funnel, i.e. leave them with the 33% of that funnel they should be talking to. So it's a massive cost saving just in terms of deal efficiency. We're not going to get involved in due diligence. There are plenty of people that do that, and that's where the very smart thinking goes into making those ultimate investment decisions. We don't bring much to that party. But once the companies go into a portfolio, typically there's 50 or 60 startups in an early stage portfolio. There's a lot of noise going on in there. And some companies are very good at making lots of noise. They're on all the platforms, they're on all the social media channels. They present things in a very compelling way. They are the alphas in the portfolio. And you can spot them. They're not always the winners, but they're the guys that will probably get the second checks. And they might not be the right guys for those second checks. Or there'll be people that are sitting in the portfolio that are that are quieter, that are more focused on what they're actually, the business of what they're doing. And it's entirely possible that they get overlooked on the way through. You know, Harry Stebbings beautifully describes that as his messy middle. And inevitably, his outcomes, when the, as the fund reach maturity, are that the companies that we thought were going to be the money makers actually end up not being. And the ones that were in his, you know, I'll get around to those at some point, are the ones that come through and are the ones that hit the lights out, which brings the returns that he delivered, returns down to his investors. And what we'll be saying to Harry and people like Harry is, look, we're just going to bring a system to that mindset that takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. And to need for you to have eyes all over the place, you know, we'll shine lights in dark corners for you and we'll reveal opportunity that may have gone overlooked. Or we'll even come up with some theses that say, right, okay, this company's got, you know, you're absolutely right to be right behind it, but we can tune it a bit. You know, there's some misalignment, you know, some management team, or there's some opportunities here. So that we're bringing forward not only the opportunity to reveal unrealized potential or potential that could have gone left behind on under the table, but also to make the best of things that are already in the spotlight. The interesting thing about the VC angle as well, of course, is if you say, and I'll get back to some of the impact numbers in a minute, because that's when things get really exciting. But if you bring an increase in the general scale up rate to bear as a result of Pixie being, you know, successful, that impact is amplified within a VC environment because they've already made the first. It's already a Darwinian pool that you're seeking to improve because they're the ones that got invested in the first place. So the impact of a general increase is felt even more. You know, it accelerates the impact of Pixie dramatically when it's put within the managed portfolio environment.
I think what you've pointed out is quite interesting, that even with all the incubators, the venture capitalist shows, like we have Dragon's Den, Shark Tanks out there, it's a highly unstructured market, and it almost feels like it's in some cases left up to chance and luck for someone to be able to get it, rather than to get it on the basis of the actual foundational strength of a startup to scale up.
As it happens, with all due credit, I don't know what the figures are for Dragon's Den, but for Shark Tank, you have a 600% better chance of being successful if you're invested on as part of that program. But if they do 20 episodes a year and you have six contestants each episode, you know, so we've got 120 companies, of which maybe, 30 or 40 get invested. We've got 400,000 startups that are trying to scale in the UK alone. 7.5 million in the world.
A drop in the ocean.
Shark Tank's not going to make a dent in this.
Yeah. And out of the 30 and 40 that get the funding on air, half of them drop out. Many of them might also just be there for the marketing. So there's also a mix-up of purpose of...
Yeah. I hear there's a due diligence process, which can be troublesome occasionally.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's great that something like Pixie is trying to address this issue. And it is a major issue, which is why I want to kind of get a bit more deeper into why you chose to actually tackle this. It's a global issue. You know, wherever there's startup, this issue is going to be prevalent. Yes, you're starting from where you are, but it's definitely something that's going to be huge. I want to understand more, based on your experience, what actually led you to take this decision that, you know, I'm going to go after this problem?
So professionally, I've been involved in data almost since, you know, since the beginning. I ran data marketing agencies and I ran frequent flyer programs for Northwest Airlines. And so data-driven marketing has been a theme that's been a constant. So the idea of using data to reveal opportunities that are asymmetrical to the general population is just part of the, you know, where I was brought up. Then there's the entrepreneur. I mean, I've got bruises of all different colors and shapes and sizes and had some great wins, and I've also had some terrific losses, some that were quite painful, more emotionally than financially, actually. They weren't things that came spectacularly out of nowhere. They were just the common themes that you, I mean, there are shades of gray, but the mistakes I made might have been avoided if I had somebody looking over my shoulder or ahead of me and just saying, you know, kind of hang on a second before we do that, or you might want to just slow the roller here, or, you know, that's not covered. I know, maybe I wouldn't have saved them all, but I could have saved some of them. So having had a general cut my teeth in data, you know, been through kind of the school of hard knocks, came out sort of in one piece. And then I got involved in doing the financial modeling for a new early stage venture capital firm, which brings you in very close contact with the fundamental mathematics of how a fund is intended to operate. Its expectations going in is that a tiny number of companies will successfully produce the returns on the fund. And from an entrepreneur's point of view, I'm thinking, well, that doesn't sound very democratic. And you've got this curve that kind of looks like a north face of the Eiger towards the top. So, you know, inevitably, you think from a mathematical point of view, what could be done in order to take the sting out of that curve and therefore create a wider opportunity for both companies to succeed and also for investors like Harry with his messy middle to find treasure in that gap. And then, you know, I literally was handed a gold plate with some research on it, where a group had brought a very close alignment between behaviors of startups over a long period of time and their propensity to be successful or not. And it's quite a narrow piece of research. It's used for a completely different purpose to Pixie. But I thought, hold on a second, there's an idea here. And if that principle of essentially looking for patterns of success could be decoded, scale up DNA, and then could be applied to, at scale, every startup in theory on the planet, and then bring those small increases in performance each different step of their journey, then that's got the potential for real impact. I mean, to put it in a slight context, if you remember this, 0.1%, if we increase the scale-up rate around the world in terms of the startups around the world, just by 0.1%, that would unlock about 7,500 more successful scale-ups. 500,000 jobs would actually generate enough income tax, if you take the global average, to fund the building of 1,000 schools in non-G20 countries. And it's even more mad than that. We want to double the rate. It's 4.6% around the world right now, which is an appalling number if you think about it. Bear in mind, that's the average. So at least half of the world is less than that. So if we just double that to what London is right now, which is about 9%, okay? The tax generated by those businesses being successful would wipe out illiteracy up to the age of 8 in 5 years. Done. So there's an impact for society and the future of mankind that comes out of these businesses being successful that goes way beyond just the interests of the founders and who started the business and goes way beyond the people who put the capital up and invest in the business. There's enough amplitude in this that if Pixie is successful, it leaves behind it a legacy of benefit for all corners of the planet, particularly those where we can make really significant impact. It sort of just puts into context the scale of the unrealized potential. So if you take all of the startups in the world and you say that only 4.6% are going to be successful, the value of those that aren't successful is equivalent to the most valuable asset class in the world. The only asset class in the world that is equal to the value of the unrealized potential in our startup ecosystem is real estate. It dwarfs bonds. It dwarfs equities. It's 1,300 times more than every single ounce of gold ever mined in the beginning. And can you imagine an asset class of any of those scales being operated on a 4.5% success rate? It's insanity. It's completely insane. And so there's, as Keith mentioned, there's a time and a place, the time is now and the place is now and the technology is now. And somebody needs to do something about this because, you know, there is just, a whole bunch of reasons, both financial and as well as impact, as well as rewarding those that have got the courage to take the leap and start up and found their own business in the first place.
That really, if you consider those success figures are global estimated figures, and then if you consider the amount of startups, like we say, into the 400,000 in the UK alone, that's given the current market trends and market outlook. We have, and I hate to harp back onto it as well, but recently, you know, looking at the interview with Lovable's CEO, where he's basically talking about almost like a decentralization of startup and businesses launching. So, yep. And what he's talking about a decentralization is, we know that the let's say the large hyperscalers within the innovation space are always bringing different products to market. But what's happening in terms of startups, you know, he's estimating that we're looking at a 50x. In terms of the amount of startups. The whole ethos is that some of the brightest minds and applications that are taught up are in the minds of the 90% of the population. And historically, yeah, the trend was the 90% would rely on the 10% who could code to build, yep, what they wanted. Now, even more historically is that it would cost almost an arm and a leg to build your application. So we're at a complete convergence between the acceleration of innovation and really economic pay-as-you-go cost models for innovative services like AI that you can customize to a specific use case. We're also at an intersection where we see NLP application deployment tools such as Lovable, and even Google's AI Studio has a build function in it as well. So only going to rapidly grow and scale from there. And the amount of startups that we'll be looking at in the UK alone, for example, I have a feeling will probably double or quadruple over the next 5 to 10 years?
The number of startups we're going to see over the next few years, particularly with AI coming into the picture now. Richard, in the next 5 years, how do you see yourself and Pixie catching up to that increased rate of startups coming to?
See, there's part of me that wants to say that the rate of success at the moment is so poor that the last thing we need is more startups. But then the other side of me says, if we could increase the quality of the starting points that meant that, you know, that Keith just says, you know, the smartest ideas don't necessarily come from the people that can forge the widgets or write the code. So what we're doing is we're reducing the barriers of smart ideas coming to market. And I think that almost plays even more perhaps into the way we're thinking, because those businesses that don't get out of the first and second years, a lot of that is to do because they never found a way to crack that threshold you need to get over, or you can get a product built and get into some form of market, get some form of traction, and then the capital follows. And I think that area then becomes a lot less terrifying because some of the upfront commitments that are necessary to get this built. Look at the way we've built our product so far with Zasmic. I mean, it's been painless. It's been fluid. We only have a small technical team. Bear in mind, we are absolutely leading edge. We are hungry for the things that are not possible. We are hungry for, and yet the size of our technical team is tiny because we work with people like Google and Zasmic, and we have an interface with them that speaks to the agility that we think we can bring to startups in the way that they run their business. We're being burdened down with our burn rate right now. I mean, investors don't believe what our burn rate is because we're not hemorrhaging tens of millions of pounds every quarter of a second, because we're spending the money in a smart way at the time we need it, when we need it, and a balance stream goes market and product development and resource building within the business. Those are constantly evolving metrics that come and go, and we're not caught, as we hope that we can help other startups that, I mean, ironically, we are customer number one for Pixie. So we have to believe that Pixie can help us successful in the same way that we will make successful our customers too, and on to thousands more.
Yeah, and just on that point of technology, Google Cloud has allowed you to be very lean with your own team and also have Zasmic's engineers be able to build that. And I want to actually have this question for both of you, that when you took the solution or the idea, which Pixie was, and applied it onto Google Cloud's technology, what was that experience like, and what actually made you kind of lean into Google Cloud and say that, you know, this is the right place for us to be building?
To answer your question, in Google's Shoreditch studio, one of the smartest people that I've ever been in the presence of was talking about, they were just about to release Vertex, and everybody in the room was a coder apart from me. In fact, I got asked so many times, what's my favorite code? I don't know. Well, hello, it's literally, I was the only one there that wasn't in a hoodie and writing code in the middle of the presentation. But there's this super smart bloke on the pool talking about what they were doing with Vertex and some other stuff. And I literally did this. I got a piece of paper out and I just literally sketched Pixie. And I said, can we do that? And he went to me, not now. I said, could we do that? He said, you go and speak to those people over there. And that was the Google startup team who then took us on board, amazingly, which was such a flattering experience. It was them that put us in touch with Zasmic, and that's where Keith comes in and explains how we made sense of all this rambling nonsense that I was working on.
Yeah, and then from there, it was about building a solid, open, and iterative partnership. So obviously, put the proof in execution in terms of the ability to deliver with the solutions and services really reinforced and accelerated the delivery methodology. We had consistent channels of communication on a daily basis where we would really tackle the phases that we were going through, end of week sprints, iterative approaches, demonstrations on a specific sprint that had been achieved previously and what the next week looked like and forecasted as well. So it was very much granular iterative approach. And the beauty of Richard and the Pixie team were they were well prepared in terms of what their expectations and of what they wanted, but also even just the preparation, like Richard talked earlier on about the ability to deliver Pixie within an economic position and with an economic output. And that's very much the strong mentality that they approached it with. You're talking about the preparation of all the specific Figma designs and the data sources and, the scorecard and what the UI UX would look like and how far we would get to that. And then our team basically, took that vision and really broke that down into a phased approach, which really made sense. There were bite-sized chunks and it was very much working collaboratively through the delivery as well. So yeah, it was an absolute amazing experience to go through as well. Kudos to Richard and Sarah and the team because they're well prepared.
We're only just getting started, mate. Powering up the jets.
Now that Pixie's actually built out, from now to, let's say, the next 5 to 10 years, what would success look like you with Pixie?
Can I just say one thing? I would like to be an industry standard.
Yes, I think that's a... I don't know how you forecast that far ahead, not in the way that things are moving so quickly, but I think what you've just said there, Keith, is a very interesting insight. It was that I'm a huge fan of immutable laws of things. And I think if this becomes the immutable kind of center of gravity for things that help startups be more successful, and that, whether it was on this path or that path in this country or that part country, or whether it was working on this technology or that technology, those are all, you know, the bones on the fish. But down the center of the spine is this idea that this is the reference, that is the place that courageous founders who believe they've got an idea that they want to make the most of would go to, and it's a ubiquitous call. And I think, Keith, it's a beautiful way of framing it. Because if we get to that far, somebody's going to be vast amounts of money for it.
You know, one likeness that I'd always refer back to, which, yes, I would say they knew that they had done or achieved a flip of an industry standard. The hyperscalers that were building out their cloud platforms in the early 2000s and sort of 2008, 2010, they put the vision in that this should become an industry standard. Now, if all of that wasn't achieved and companies would still have to have on-prem servers and they wanted to scale globally, the cost implications and the economic implications and the economic sort of global patterns that we see now, they wouldn't exist. So inherently what they did by creating these economic pay-as-you-go models, deployment, global delivery, you know, Google has their likes of their CDN and global delivery network and stuff. So you've got all of these evolutions of innovation that have basically made it an industry standard. Now, they've contributed so much to economic output and economic growth globally, I think, for every country, to be fair. In a similar fashion, when we look back at the historical trend of startups and VCs and how they've handled startup funds and various different sectors that would be under their umbrella, for example, there have been dramatic changes over the life cycle of that from the 1970s, 1980s until now. But has there been a specific flip of the coin where it becomes an industry standard? Not yet, I would say. And look how fast innovation has basically taken us by storm, from ChatGPT-1 to ChatGPT-4, from, you know, singular modal just text models to multimodal capability, vision, text to speech, speech to text, you name it. So I see it as an industry standard. Let's legislate for it to be an industry standard.
But I think even spiritually, it's a lonely existence being a founder. Yeah, I can speak for it from a first-hand point of view. I've never spoke to a founder that's disagreed with me ever. And it's not a sprint; it's a marathon. I call it the loneliness of the long-distance founder. I think what Pixie can bring to the global startup ecosystem is a sense you're never completely alone. It'll give you a place where you can congregate either, you know, the obvious things like capital and data and performance, you know, optimization, but also just humans that can interact with each other on a common subject, which actually, not surprisingly, is a quite a strong determinant of success. Your level of connectedness across the founder networks outside your own country, it's a very, very strong influencer of outcomes. So, and I very much like, you know, the idea of building something where there is a community dimension to it, but a community with a purpose, that founders don't have to feel alone. You know, they don't have to feel that they don't have other people that feel like they do. And there's a mindfulness to this, which I think, being a founder should be a joy, and it's not often you see founders in fully joyful mode. And if I thought we could index the joyfulness of the startup ecosystem, I'm guaranteed I could push that one up.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love the idea of making this into a timeless piece of technology, not something that kind of has hype and then dies down. Yeah. I think that's fantastic. And I'm sure you have hopefully many other startup founders who are kind of in the thick of this industry right now listening. So, and who are hopefully not lonely, but if they are, what one piece of advice would you give to them in navigating this space?
Firstly, I'd love to say to them, first of all, would they please reach out to me and say hello and get me at Richard at heypixie.ai, because I'm really keen to build an initial kind of program of tests. Pilots or people that I can develop Pixie with to make it the best version of itself, and then Keith and I can bring our teams in an informed way forward that says, you know, there are some things that we've got, really lovely parts of Pixie with them. Sure, there's bits we either haven't got or we haven't understood correctly or we could interpret differently. So I'm genuinely looking for people to talk to from all corners of the planet. So if you're watching this now and you would like to be involved at the beginning of something which we think has got foundational potential, you know, get to the website, heypixie.ai, or drop me a line directly. Find Richard Candless on LinkedIn.
Yeah, we'll attach that to the show notes so everyone can access it. And for those same startup founders, would you have one piece of advice as well in navigating this industry as it is right now?
Take the guesswork out of it. You know, make your journey as objectively informed as possible, not as a substitute for your courage or your innovation or your insight that's brought you to the point where you've had the business of setting up a business to fulfill those things. But there is a way to narrow the, you know, to get the plane to land in a more predictable fashion, to narrow the landing slope. None of this is magic. And none of this is, you know, 3 points from the halfway line. This is us helping you grind it out until you reach a point where you've been successful. Because I'm absolutely sure we can improve the chances of that happening.
Love that.
Awesome. I think that's a wrap. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you, Keith, for joining us today. And thank you to everyone who's listening. We'll attach Richard and Keith's email, LinkedIn, into the show notes. So reach out to them. Reach out to Richard if you're a startup founder stuck in an ecosystem that is a bit unpredictable. And Keith, if you want to build an amazing solution. So I thank everyone for joining us. I hope you had a great time listening to both Richard and Keith. Until next time, this is the AI and Beyond for Business podcast. Bye.